He led the way to an archway-topped door. He waved his hand as he approached, and as the wall at the blue house had done, the door simply vanished. And stretched out beyond the doorway was a dream world. Card stepped through, his first impression being that they had stepped out into the open air, into a meticulously tended garden. Directly in front of them was a wide expanse of flowers and small plants and shrubs, all carefully and artistically arranged, stretching out for perhaps 100 meters ahead of them. A winding path led through the garden, with stone benches set at various points along it. At its side edges, the garden gave way to a forest of tall trees of dozens of different species, with leaves whose colors varied from dark blue to brilliant red. From somewhere within the forest came the bubbling sound of water running over a rock-bottomed creek. But from their position, he couldn't see where it was. It wasn't until he followed the tallest trees up to their tops that he spotted the sky-blue dome above them. A dome that flowed down into unobtrusive walls behind the stands of trees.
"Yes, it's all inside," Cardass confirmed. "Very much inside, in fact. We're under one of the mountains to the east of Rintana City. Beautiful, isn't it?"
"You tend it yourself?" Card asked.
"I do most of the work,"
Cardass said, starting forward toward the path.
"But there are a few others as well. This way."
He led them through the garden to a concealed door between two red-trunked trees on the far side.
"Must have been some job putting all this together," Shada commented as the door again vanished at a wave of Cardass's hand.
"Your Angti friends help?"
"In an indirect way, yes,"
Cardass said.
"This is my conversation room, as beautiful as the garden in its own way."
"Yes," Card agreed, looking around. The conversation room was laid out in more or less classic High Alderaanian style, done up in dark wood and intertwined plants, with the same feeling of expansiveness as the garden outside.
"What did you mean by indirect help?"
"It's rather ironic, really,"
Cardass said, angling off through the conversation room toward a door to their right.
"When I arrived on Exocron, I started building my home under these mountains, purely for defensive reasons. Now that defense is no longer an issue, I find I enjoy the place for its solitude."
Card glanced at Shada. "Defense no longer an issue? Was Raykas that much of a threat?" Cardass frowned.
"Raykas? Oh, no, Talon. You misunderstand. Raykas was a threat, certainly, but only to the rest of Exocron. I helped get rid of him in order to protect my neighbors. But I myself was in no danger at all. Come! You'll particularly want to see this."
He waved the door away and gestured them forward. Card stepped inside and stopped in amazement. He was standing at the outer rim of a circular room that appeared to be even bigger across than the garden they just left. The floor of the room dipped, amphitheater fashion, toward the center, where he could see the edge of what looked like a workstation or computer desk. Arrayed in concentric circles around the desk, with only narrow walkways separating them, were circle after circle of 2-meter-high data cases. And filling each of the shelves, on each of the data cases, were data cards. Thousands and thousands of data cards.
"Knowledge, Talon,"
Cardass said quietly from beside him.
"Information. My passion once. My weapon and my defense. And my comfort."
He shook his head.
"Amazing, isn't it? What we sometimes persuade ourselves are the most important things in life."
"Yes,"
Card murmured. Cardass's library. And the Ka'amas document.
"So Antuni lied to us,"
Shada spoke up, the edge in her voice cutting into Card's sense of wonder.
"He said he didn't know what happened to your library."
"Antuni!"
Cardass called.
Did you lie to them?
Not at all, Georges.
Antuni's distant voice protested from behind them. Card turned to see the little man still on the far side of the conversation room, busying himself with drinks.
I merely said that whatever you had done with it had been done before I came to be in your service.
Which is perfectly true,
Cardass agreed, gesturing them back out of the library.
But come, sit down. I know you have so many questions.
Let me start with the most important one, Card said, not moving. The reason we came here was to look for a vitally important historical document. It involves...
Yes, I know,
Cardass said with a sigh.
The Karl Marx document.
You know about that?
Shada asked.
I'm not the frail, bedridden old man you met a few hours ago,
Cardass reminded her mildly.
I still have a few sources of information, and I try to keep in touch with what's happening back home.
He shook his head.
Unfortunately, I can't help you. As soon as the Karl Marx matter first broke, I checked through all my files to see if I had a copy. But I'm afraid I don't.
Card felt his heart sink. You're absolutely sure? Cardass nodded.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Card nodded back. After all the work and danger in getting here, there it was. The end of the road. And at its finish, an empty hand. Shada wasn't ready to let it go quite that easily.
And what if you had found a copy?
She demanded.
You can talk all you want about keeping in touch, but the fact is that for the past 20 years, you've been taking it easy out here, and letting everyone else do all the work.
Cardass lifted his eyebrows.
Suspicious and unforgiving both,
he commented.
That's rather sad. Isn't there anyone or anything you trust?
I'm a professional bodyguard,
Shada bit out.
Trust isn't part of the job. And don't try to change the subject. You sat out the whole rebellion, not to mention Thrawn's first bid for power. Why?
Something unreadable flicked across Cardass's face.
Thrawn,
he murmured, his eyes sweeping slowly around his library.
A most interesting person indeed. I have most of his history with the Empire on file here. Pulled it all out recently, reading through it. There's more to his story than meets the eye. I'm convinced of it. Far more.
You still haven't answered my question,
Shada said. Cardass lifted his eyebrows.
I wasn't aware you'd asked one,
he said.
All I heard were accusations that I've been letting others do all the work. But if that was intended as a question...
He smiled.
I suppose it's true, in a way. But only in a way. I've merely let others do their work, while I've been doing mine. But come! Antuni's rusk tea will be getting cold.
He led the way across the conversation room, to the sunken circle. Antuni was waiting patiently there, his now loaded tray set on a pillar table.
What have you told the lady about me, Talon?
Cardass asked, as he gestured the two of them to seats on one side of the circle.
Just to avoid repeating things.
I've told her the basics, Card said, gingerly sitting down.
Despite all of the geniality and surface friendliness, he couldn't shake the feeling that there was something more going on beneath the surface.
How you started the organization? Then abruptly left 20 years ago.
And did you tell her about my kidnapping by the Bifashi Dark Jedi?
Cardass asked, his tone suddenly odd.
That's where it all really began.
Card threw a glance at Shada.
I mentioned it, yes.
Cardass sighed, not looking up at Antuni as the latter put a steaming cup into his hands.
It was a terrible experience,
he said quietly, gazing into the cup.
Possibly the first time in my life I'd felt truly and genuinely terrified. He was half mad with rage. Maybe more than half mad. With all of Darth Vader's power and none of his self-control. One of my crewmen, he physically ripped to shreds, literally tearing his body apart. The other three, he took over mentally, twisting and searing their minds and turning them into little more than living extensions of himself. Me.
He took a careful sip of his drink.
Me. He left mostly alone.
He continued.
I'm still not sure why. Unless he thought he might need my knowledge of ports and space lanes to make his escape. Or perhaps he simply wanted an intact mind left aboard who could recognize his power and greatness and be properly frightened by it.
He sipped again.
We headed across the space lanes, dodging or avoiding the forces gathering against him. I thought up scheme after scheme to defeat him as we traveled, none of which ever made it past the planning stage, for the simple reason that he knew about each of them almost before I did. I got the feeling that my pitiful efforts greatly amused him. Finally, for reasons I still don't entirely understand, we made for a little backwater system, not even important enough to make it onto most of the charts. A planet with nothing but swamps and dank forests and frozen slush. A planet named Dagobah.
There's a whiff of some exotic spice from Card's side, and he looked up to see N2Ni hand him his cup. The little man's usual cheerful expression had vanished, replaced by a profound seriousness Card had never seen in him before.
I don't know if the Dark Jedi expected to be all alone down there,
Cardass went on.
But if he did, he was quickly disappointed. We barely stepped outside the ship when we spotted a funny-looking little creature with big pointed ears standing at the edge of the clearing where we'd put down. It was a Jedi Master named Yoda. I don't know whether that was his home or whether he had just flown in specially for the occasion. What I do know is that he was definitely waiting for us.
An odd shiver ran through Cardass's thin body.
I won't try to describe that battle,
he said in a low voice.
Even after 45 years of thinking about it, I'm not sure I can. For nearly a day and a half, the swamp blazed with fire and lightning and things I still don't understand. At the end of it, the Dark Jedi was dead, disintegrating in a final massive blaze of blue fire.
He took a shuddering breath.
None of my crew survived that battle. Not that there was much left of what they'd been anyway. I didn't expect to survive either. But to my surprise, Yoda took it upon himself to nurse me back to life.
Card nodded. I've seen a little of what Luke Skywalker can do with healing trances, he said. Better than Bacta in some cases. Cardass snorted.
In my case, Bacta would have been completely useless,
he stated flatly.
As it was, it took Yoda quite a while to return me to health. I still don't know how long. Afterward, I was able to jerry-rig the ship well enough to get it spaceworthy and limp home. It wasn't until I was back with the organization that I began to realize that somewhere in that whole procedure, some part of me had been changed.
He looked at Card.
I'm sure you remember, Talon. I seem to have gained the ability to outthink my opponents, to guess the strategies and plans, to know when one of them was planning a move against me. Abilities I assumed I'd somehow absorbed from Yoda during the healing process.
He looked up at the ceiling, a new fire in his eyes and voice.
And suddenly, there were no limits to what I could do. None. I began expanding the organization, swallowing up any group that seemed potentially useful and eliminating everyone that didn't. Victory after victory after victory. Everywhere I went, I conquered. I saw the Hutt's criminal cartels and planned how I would take them down. Foresaw the gathering of power around Senator Palpatine and considered where and how I could best insert myself into the coming struggle for my own advantage. There was literally nothing that could stop me, and I and the universe both knew it.
Abruptly, the fire faded away.
And then,
he said quietly,
without warning, everything suddenly collapsed.
He took a long drink from his cup.
What happened?
Shada asked into the silence. Card stole a look at her, mildly surprised at the intense concentration in her expression. Despite all her professed distrust of Cardass himself, she clearly found his story riveting.
My health fell apart,
Cardass said.
Over a period of just a few weeks, all the youth and vigor that Yoda's healing had woven into my body seemed to evaporate.
He looked at Shada.
Very simply, I was dying.
Card nodded. The last mystery of that beckon call lying abandoned in the Dagobah swamp suddenly falling into place.
And so you went back to Yoda and asked for help?
Asked?
Cardass gave a short, self-deprecating laugh.
Not asked, Talon. Demanded.
He shook his head at the memory.
It must have looked quite absurd, really. There I stood, towering over him with a blaster in one hand and my beck and call in the other, threatening to bring my ship and all its awesome weaponry to bear on this short, wizened creature leaning on a staff in front of me. Of course, I was the single-handed creator of the greatest smuggling organization of all time. Well, he was nothing but a simple little Jedi master.
He shook his head again.
I'm surprised he didn't kill you on the spot,
Shada said.
At the time, I almost wished he had,
Cardass said ruefully.
It would have been far less humiliating. Instead, he simply took the beckon call and blaster away from me and sent them spinning off into the swamp and held me suspended a few centimeters above the ground and let me scream and flail to my heart's content. And when I finally ran out of strength and breath, he told me I was going to die.
N2Ni stepped to his side, silently pouring more of the spice drink into his cup.
I thought the first part had been humiliating,
Cardass went on.
The next part was worse. As I sat there panting on a rock, swamp water seeping into my boots, he told me in exquisitely painful detail just how badly I'd squandered the gift of life he'd given back to me a quarter century earlier. How my utterly selfish pursuit of personal power and aggrandizement had left me empty of spirit and vacant of purpose.
He looked at Card.
By the time he finished, I knew I could never go back. That I could never ever face any of you again.
Card looked down at his cup, suddenly aware he was gripping it tightly. Then you didn't... I mean, you weren't...
Angry with you?
Cardass smiled at him.
On the contrary, old friend. You were the single bright spot in the whole painful mess. For the first time since I'd left Dagobah, I found myself thinking about all the people in my organization. People who I'd now abandoned to the viciousness of internecine warfare as my lieutenants, most of them as selfish as I was, fought for their individual slices of the fat Brualki I'd created.
He shook his head. His old eyes almost misty.
I didn't hate you for taking over, Talon. Far from it. You held the organization together, treated my people with the dignity and respect they deserved. The dignity and respect I'd never bothered to give them. You transformed my selfish ambition into something to be proud of. And for 20 years, I've wanted to thank you for that.
And to Card's surprise, he stood up and crossed the circle.
Thank you,
he said simply, holding out his hand. Card stood up, a terrible weight lifting from his shoulders.
You're welcome, he murmured,
gripping the extended hand.
I just wish I'd known sooner.
I know,
Cardass said, letting go and returning to his seat.
But as I said, for the first few years I was too ashamed to even face you. And then later, when Yamara Jade and Lando Calrissian came sniffing around, I assumed you would soon be showing up yourself.
I should have, Card conceded. But I wasn't exactly eager to do so.
I understand,
Cardass said.
It's as much my fault as it was yours.
He waved a hand.
Still, as it turned out, your arrival was just what we needed to eliminate the threat from Ray Koss and his pirates.
He pointed toward the ceiling.
That's one of the many things I've been learning from the Yang-Ti, in fact. Though not all is predetermined, all is somehow still being guided. I still don't quite understand that, but I'm working on it.
Sounds like something a Jedi would say, Card suggested.
Similar, but not the same,
Cardass agreed.
The Yang-Ti have an understanding of the Force, but it's a different understanding from that of the Jedi. Or perhaps it's merely a different aspect of the Force that they relate to. I'm not really sure which. Yoda couldn't heal me, you see. Or rather, didn't have the time the task would require. He told me he needed to prepare for what he said was possibly the most important instruction he had had for the past 100 years.
Card nodded. Another piece of the puzzle falling into place. Luke Skywalker.
Was it him?
Cardass asked.
I've always suspected that. I was never able to confirm he actually trained on Dagobah. At any rate, Yoda said my only chance to postpone my death was to seek out the Yang-Ti monks of the Cathal Rift, who might be willing to help me.
Card gestured toward him.
Obviously they did.
Oh yes, they did,
Cardass said, his mouth twisting wryly.
But at what price?
Card frowned, a shiver running through him.
What kind of price?
Cardass smiled.
Nothing less than my life, Talon,
he said.
My life to be spent learning their ways of the Force.
He held up a hand.
Don't misunderstand, please. It wasn't their demand, but my choice. All my life, you see, I've relished challenges. The bigger the better, once I'd gotten a taste of what they had discovered out here.
He waved his hand around the room.
It was the biggest challenge I'd ever faced. How could I pass it up?
I thought you needed a certain amount of inborn aptitude to be a Jedi,
Shada pointed out.
A Jedi, perhaps,
Cardass nodded.
But as I said, the Yang-Ti have a different view of the Force. Not in terms of Jedi and Dark Jedi, of black and white, as it were. But in a way, I like to think of it as a full-color rainbow. Here, let me show you. Would you move your tray, please, Antuni?
The little man picked up the tray, leaving the pillar table empty, as Cardass set his cup down on the floor in front of him.
Now watch,
he said, rubbing his hands together.
Let's see if I can do this.
He settled his shoulders and gazed hard at the pillar table. And abruptly, with a sharp pop of displaced air, a small crystalline decanter appeared. Card jerked violently, his drink sloshing up the side of his cup and over the edge onto his fingers. Never in any of his dealings with Skywalker or Mara had he seen anything like that?
It's all right,
Cardass said hastily.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to startle you.
You created that?
Shada asked, her voice sounding stunned.
No, of course not,
Cardass assured her.
I merely moved it in here from the cooking area. One of the little tricks the Yangti taught me. The idea is to see the room, and then envision it with the decanter already here.
He broke off, retrieving his cup and getting to his feet.
I'm sorry. I could go on all day about the Yangti and the Force, but you're both tired, and I'm neglecting my duties as host. Let me show you to your rooms, and let you relax for a while I see about a meal.
That's very kind of you, Card said, standing up and shaking the drops of spice drink off his fingers. But I'm afraid we have to leave. If you can't provide us with the Karl Moss document, we need to start back to New Republic space right away.
I understand your commitments and obligations, Talon,
Cardass said.
But you can certainly afford to take one night just to relax.
I wish we could, Card said, trying not to sound too impatient. I really do, but...
Besides, if you leave now, it'll actually take you much longer to get home,
Cardass added.
I've spoken to the Yangti, and they've agreed to send a ship tomorrow to carry the wild card anywhere you want to go.
And how does that gain us anything?
Shada asked.
It gains you because their star drive is considerably different from ours,
Cardass told her.
As you may have noticed from the battle, instead of using the usual hyperspace travel, the ships are able to make an instantaneous jump to whatever point they wish to go to.
Card looked at Shada. You were on the sputter scopes, he said. Was that what they were doing? She shrugged.
It's as good an explanation as any, she conceded.
I know Hisishi scrubbed the data, and she couldn't figure out what had happened either.
She looked suspiciously at Cardass.
So why can't they do this for us now?
Because I told them you wouldn't need the ship until morning,
Cardass said with a smile.
Come now. Indulge an old man's desire for company, won't you? I'm sure your crew could use a good night's rest, too, after all they've been through on this trip.
Card shook his head in defeat. Still a master manipulator, aren't you, George?
The smile widened.
A man can change only so much,
he said genially.
And while they're freshening up,
he added, shifting his eyes to 3PO,
you can come help me cook while we have our talk.
Certainly, sir. Do you know I have become quite a fair chef during my service to Princess Leia and her family?
Wonderful,
Cardass said.
Perhaps you could teach me some of your culinary expertise. Why don't you call your ship, Talon, and tell them to settle down until morning? And then I'll show you and the lady to your rooms.
Chapter 32. The starlines collapsed down into stars, and gazing out the Falcon's viewport, Leia inhaled sharply.
Counselor?
Elagos asked, frowning at her from the co-pilot's seat. Leia pointed out at the planet Bothawi directly ahead. The planet and the vast armada of warships swarming around it.
It's worse than I thought it would be,
she said in a low voice.
Look at them all.
Yes, Elagos said softly. Ironic, isn't it? All those mighty ships of war, preparing to fight and kill and die. Widespread carnage arising for their deep respect for the Kaamasi remnant.
Leia looked across the cockpit at him. There was a profound sadness in his face as he stared out at the ships. A sadness tinged with an almost bitter acceptance of the inevitable.
You've tried to talk to them,
she reminded him.
You and the other Trustins. I'm afraid they're beyond listening to reason.
Reason and calm are always the first casualties of such confrontations.
Elagos gestured toward the gathered warships.
All that's left is the thirst for vengeance and the righting of perceived wrongs. Whether those wrongs exist at all, or whether the object of the vengeance is responsible for them.
He craned his neck.
Tell me, Can we see the comet from here?
Comet?
Leia asked, glancing down at her mid-range display. There was a comet there, all right, below and to port side, blocked by the Falcon's main hull. Rolling the ship a few degrees, she brought it up around and into view.
Yes, there it is, Elago said. Magnificent, isn't it?
Yes,
Leia agreed. It wasn't as big as some comets she'd seen, nor was its tail much more than average, but its proximity to the planet more than made up for its modest size. Still on its way inward toward its loop around the sun, it had apparently just passed through Bothawee's orbit.
We rarely saw comets from Ka'amas, Elago said,
his voice sounding distant.
There were few in our system, and none that came nearly so close to our world as these planet skimmers do. There are, what, 20 of them in this group?
Something like that, Leia said. I remember hearing once that whole branches of Bothan folklore had grown up around them.
Most identifying them as omens of momentous or terrifying occurrences, no doubt,
Elago said.
Having something like that blaze passed overhead barely 500,000 kilometers away would tend to make you worry,
Leia agreed.
Especially with them coming by once or twice a year,
she grimaced.
Of course, with Bothan backstab politics the way they are, momentous and terrifying events probably had a hard time keeping up with the comets.
I imagine so,
Elago said.
I pity them, Counselor. I really do. For all the strength and mental agility they claim their political techniques provide to their species, I see them as an essentially unhappy people. Their whole outlook on life breeds mistrust, and without trust, there can be no genuine peace. Neither in politics, nor in the quiet individuality of the heart and spirit.
I don't think I've ever thought of it quite that way before,
Leia said, rotating the Falcon back to its original attitude and putting the comet again out of sight.
Did your people try to enlighten them to all that?
I'm sure some of us did, Elago said. But I don't think Bothan resentment toward us was the reason they sabotaged our shields, if that's what you are wondering.
Leia felt her face flush.
You sure you don't have any force sensitivity?
He smiled.
None at all, he assured her. But the Ka'amasi remnant has thought long and hard about this puzzle ever since our world's destruction.
He gave a full-body shrug.
My own belief is that while the saboteurs were probably threatened or blackmailed into their action by Palpatine or his agents, there was something more personal involved. Some dark secret those particular Bothans held that they feared the Ka'amasi knew and might someday reveal.
But you don't know what that secret might be?
Elago shook his head.
I don't. Others of the Remnant might have learned that memory, but if so, probably unaware of its significance.
Leia frowned.
Learned the memory?
There are certain unique qualities to Ka'amasi memories,
he told her.
Someday, perhaps, I'll tell you about them.
Kaushala!
Sakasak's voice cut in sharply over the intercom.
Travel ahead! 12 degrees by 4!
Leia looked out that direction. An Ashori war cruiser on the near edge of the swarm of ships seemed to be drifting toward a pair of much smaller Sifkri skiffs.
Looks like he's trying to get into a lower orbit,
she said.
Unfortunately, that particular space is already occupied,
Elagos pointed out.
Yes,
Leia agreed, frowning. Odd. Despite the hopeless mismatch in size and firepower, the skiffs were nevertheless holding their ground.
And suddenly she saw why.
Coming up fast on the skiff's far side were a pair of Diamalin blockade carriers. Elagos saw them, too.
I believe, he said. Someone has decided to force the issue.
Leia glanced across the rest of the gathered ships. Others were starting to react to the imminent confrontation. starting to drift out of their confining orbital slots, or opening fighter bay doors, or rotating so as to better target the nearest of the opposition. The Sifkree skips were starting to waver now, clearly not eager to be at the center of a massive firefight. The Ashori, recognizing their hesitation, increased its speed toward them. In response, the two Diamala also picked up their pace, splitting formation into a flank crossfire stance.
"They are going to run down those Sifkris," Elagos murmured, "or else the Diamala will open fire on the Ashori to prevent it. Either way, both sides will claim the other was the instigator."
"And either way, the shooting starts,"
Leia said tightly, running her fingers down the sensor data. New Republic ships. There had to be some New Republic ships out there somewhere. If one of them was close enough to intervene, or even get in between the Ashori and Diamala. But there were only three Corellian corvettes carrying New Republic IDs, all on the far side of the pack of ships. No chance at all that they could get to the confrontation in time. Which meant it was up to her.
"Everyone hang on!"
she called toward the intercom. Without waiting for a reply from the two Nogri, she turned the Falcon's nose toward the Ashori cruiser and threw full power to the sublight drive. The engines roared to life, the acceleration pushing Leia momentarily into her seat before the compensators could catch up.
"I trust you have a plan," Elico said calmly over the noise. "Do bear in mind that your High Council authority will not likely be enough to stop them."
"I wasn't even going to bring that up,"
Leia said, glancing at the nav display and easing the helm yoke back just a bit. The Falcon was now on a collision course with the Ashori cruiser's stern.
"Take over,"
she added, pulling off her restraints and snagging her lightsaber as she got up from her seat.
"Keep us on this course."
"Understood."
Elagos' voice came distantly back to her as she sprinted down the tunnel and skidded past the exit hatchway toward the aft cargo bay bulkhead door. She stretched out to the control switch with the force as she approached, sending the door sliding open.
"Counselor?"
Mark Kemp's anxious voice called from the upper quad laser.
"Stay there!"
Leia called to him as she ducked into the cargo bay and crossed to the starboard side of the ship. Through one more door, and she came at last to the access grille, protecting the starboard power converters and ion flux stabilizer. Han was going to kill her, but it was their only chance. Igniting her lightsaber, clenching her teeth, she jabbed the glowing blade into one of the power converters and dragged it across into the stabilizer. And grabbed for a handhold as the Falcon bucked like a stung tauntaun. It bucked again, and suddenly the drone of the engines changed to an ominous whine. 20 seconds later, she was back in the cockpit.
"Report?"
she asked as she slid back into her seat.
"We've lost starboard maneuvering," Elico said. "The engines appear to be trying to go into a feedback instability."
He glanced at her. "I certainly hope this is part of your plan."
"Trust me,"
Leia assured him, trying to feel as confident as she sounded as she keyed the comm.
"Ashori cruiser, this is freighter Millennium Falcon. We're in serious trouble and urgently request assistance."
There was no answer.
"Ashori cruiser!"
"This is the Ashori war cruiser, Pratamanins!"
An angry-sounding Ashori voice snarled from the speaker.
"Identify yourself!"
"This is New Republic High Counselor Leia Organa Solo, aboard the freighter Millennium Falcon,"
Leia said.
"We've lost maneuvering and power control in our starboard engines. Our current course has us passing too close to your hull. I need you to move immediately out of our path while we try to regain control."
There was another long pause. Leia watched the warship looming ever nearer, uncomfortably aware that if the Ashori commander chose, he could easily turn this whole thing to his own advantage. He had only to use her request as an excuse to speed up his drive toward the Sifkree skiffs.
"I ask you to please hurry,"
Leia said. A thought occurred to her, and she reached over to blur the fine focus of her comm a bit, just enough to let some of the other ships beyond the Ashori eavesdrop on the transmission.
"My passenger, Trustant Elagos Akla, is attempting to effect repairs. but I'm afraid the equipment aboard is not within standard Ka'amasi technical expertise.
Without a word, Elagos unstrapped and got to his feet, disappearing out through the cockpit door.
Ishori cruiser predominance. Do you still copy?
Leia added.
Repeating.
No need to repeat.
The voice snarled again. Leia felt automatic anger stirring in response to the tone, forced herself to remember that all the emotion in the Ishori voice meant there was some serious thinking going on. She shifted her eyes to the cruiser again and held her breath. And abruptly, the Ishori's advance toward the skiff slowed, its stern rotating instead out of the Falcon's path.
We stand ready to assist you and Trustant Akla,
the Ishori bit out, his voice already sounding calmer. The thinking was over, and it was time for action.
Lower your shields and prepare for acceleration impact,
he continued.
We will attempt to lock a tractor beam onto you to slow your rush.
Thank you,
Leia said, keying off the shields. They didn't affect tractor beams all that much, but there was no point in making a tricky high-speed grab any harder than it already was.
Once we're in your beam, we'll try a cold shutdown and see if we can bring this under control.
We stand ready to provide any assistance you and Trustant Akla require. Stand ready.
The Falcon jerked as the tractor beam caught it, wobbled a moment, then settled down as the lock firmed. Reaching across to the engine controls, Leia threw the shutdown switches. The engine whine ran down the scale and faded into silence. On the control board, indicators turned red. Around her, the lights flickered once as battery power took over.
We read successful shutdown. If you wish, we will bring you aboard our ship to assist you in your repairs.
For a moment, Leia was tempted. Having a Ka'amasi aboard one of the most outspoken and confrontational species ships might help stretch the peace out here. But on the other hand, it could also be misinterpreted as Elagos's tacit endorsement of the Ishori's anti-Bothan stance.
Thank you again, she told the alien. But we have an urgent appointment with President Gavrisim that we can't delay. If you would escort us over to the group of New Republic ships, we would very much appreciate it.
Of course,
the Ishori said, with only the barest hesitation. The Diamala had reached the Sifkri skiffs now, the four of them standing together in quiet defiance against any further action. The chance had been missed, and the Ishori knew it. As did the rest of the Armada. All around them, Leia saw the other ships were starting to settle back into their taut, watchful waiting. The flashpoint was safely passed. Or at least this flashpoint was. She keyed off the comm.
You're really taking a beating this trip, aren't you?
She murmured, patting the Falcon's control board sympathetically.
I'm sorry.
The door behind her slid open.
I see it worked, Elagos said, slipping into the co-pilot seat again. You have a fine and unique gift of diplomacy, Counselor.
And sometimes I'm just lucky, Leia said.
Elagos lifted his eyebrows.
I thought Jedi didn't believe in luck.
It comes of hanging around Han and his ship, Leia said dryly. Where did you go, anyway? Back to look at the stabilizer?
The Ka'amasi nodded.
I didn't expect to be able to do anything. Certainly not after you'd finished with it. But you'd indicated I was trying to repair it, and I wanted there to be some truth in what you are saying.
Truth,
Leia sighed.
That's what we need here, Elagos. What we need desperately. Truth.
Captain Solo will have that truth here within another day, Elagos reminded her quietly. All you and President Gavrisim need to do is hold things together that long.
Leia stretched out with the Force, trying to get a feel for the future. No, I don't think so, she said slowly. Something tells me it's not going to be that easy. Not nearly that easy.
Abbott and Cliff had cut through the floor of the Hodin Tapcalf storage sub-basement floor, their first night of work. A 10-minute task with the fusion cutter Penson had scrounged from somewhere. But after that, the job had switched over to something longer, harder, and considerably more tedious.
4 more days of this, huh?
Cliff grunted, heaving another shovelful of noxious boffawee dirt out of the chest-deep hole onto the large drop cloth they'd spread out to catch it.
Well, if we really put our backs into it, maybe it'll only take 3.
Navit pointed out, scooping up the dirt from the cloth in turn and dumping it into their Valcrex fusion disintegration canister. He sympathized with Cliff's frustration, but there wasn't a lot either of them could do about it. The vibrations of their digging were iffy enough, but if they tried operating heavy equipment within range of the power conduit sensors, they'd bring Bothan security down on them in double-quick time.
"Thanks, Lutz,"
Cliff said dryly, dumping another shovelful.
"You know, I don't mind dying for the Empire, but to Vader with these preliminaries."
"Watch your words,"
Navit warned him, glancing at the door at the top of the stairway. Penson was supposed to be keeping an eye on the door to the sub-basement, but there were a handful of other staff and night guards still up in the Tapcalf, and a wrong word overheard by one of them could ruin everything. He scooped up the next shovelful. There was a scrabbling sound at the door. Navit let the shovel down silently onto the cloth, dropping to one knee and drawing his blaster in a single smooth motion. He leveled the weapon on the door, then lifted it at the soft 212 knock. The door opened, and Horvick stuck his head around the corner.
"Pack it up," he hissed. "The night guards think they've spotted an intruder, and they might come down here looking."
Cliff was already out of the hole, manhandling the square of Duracrete floor they'd cut back into place.
"They get a good look?"
Navit asked, holstering his blaster and giving Cliff a hand.
"I don't know," Horvick said grimly. "But personally, my money's on that old woman of yours. I spotted someone with your description of her sitting off in a corner booth when Penson and I came on duty."
"Terrific,"
Navit snarled under his breath, leaving Cliff to disguise the edges of their trapdoor as he shut off the disintegrator and carried it back to its hiding place behind a stack of Vodacrine cases.
"Well, don't just stand there. Go help them find her."
"Right," Horvick said. "What about you?"
"We'll head outside," he said. "Maybe we can tag her on our way out."
"Happy hunting," Horvick said, and disappeared.
It took 30 seconds to fold up the drop cloth and hide it, and another minute to ease their way up through the main basement to the gimmicked back door. The streets in this part of Drev Starn were mostly deserted at this hour. The high-mounted glow panels dimmed to a fairly low light.
"I'll take back here,"
Navit murmured to Cliff.
"You circle around front. Don't let anyone see you." "Don't worry."
Moving like a shadow, Cliff headed down the side alley and disappeared around the corner of the building. Checking both directions, Navit crossed to a trash container a few meters away. Sinking into a shadow, he balanced his blaster across one knee and waited. And waited. Occasionally, he spotted figures hurrying by in front of the lighted windows of the Tapcalf, and several times the Hodin or one of his night guards poked their head out the back door, double-checked the lock, and went back in. But no one came out and stayed out. Not the woman or anyone else. It was an hour before the commotion seemed to finally die down inside. Navit waited another 30 minutes, irritably counting the number of shovelfuls behind schedule this was costing them, before finally pulling out his comlink.
"Cliff?"
"Nothing."
Cliff's voice came back. He sounded irritated, too.
"Sounds like they've given up."
"Must have been a false alarm," Navit said.
"Come on around and we'll get back to work."
A few minutes later, they were back in the sub-basement. Cliff retrieved the drop cloth as Navit headed around the stacked Vodacrine cases for the disintegrator, and paused there. Lying on top of the disintegrator was a comlink.
"Cliff?"
he called softly,
come here.
A moment later, the other was at his side.
I don't believe it, he said, sounding stunned. How in blazes did she pull this one off?
Why don't we ask her?
Navit said, carefully picking up the comlink. It was a binary linked type, he noted. The sort typically carried on small starships and connected only to another specific comlink. He gave it a quick once-over for booby traps, then flicked it on.
You're very inventive, he said. I'll give you that.
Why, thank you.
The old woman's voice came back promptly.
That's very flattering, particularly coming from an Imperial Dirty Tricks team.
Navit glanced at Cliff.
You know, that's the second time you've accused us of being Imperials, he reminded her. You are just guessing, of course.
Oh, hardly. Who else would be looking to take down the Bothans' planetary shields?
You're still just guessing, Navit said, straining his ears for some sign of telltale sounds in the background, and wishing viciously he had the equipment that would let him trace the transmission. If you were sure, you'd have called Bothan security instead of still skulking around yourself this way.
Who says I haven't called them? Or maybe I like skulking around. It could be I used to do this sort of thing all the time against huts and other slime. Maybe I'm looking for a new challenge.
Or maybe you're looking for an early and violent death,
Navit countered.
How did you find us, anyway?
Oh, come on. You don't really think your cover is that good, do you? My new rep buddies and I had you pegged first time off the rack. So what was the deal with those metal mites at the shield generator, anyway?
Navit smiled tightly.
Fishing now, are we? Please.
You can never tell. Incidentally, whichever of you gimmick that back door lock needs to do a better job next time. It was so obvious, you might as well have hung a sign on it. It did come in handy, though.
I imagine it did, Navit said. You're still in the building, aren't you?
Now who's fishing? Actually, no. I left some time ago. There's a crawl space beneath the ceiling that leads to a handy skylight. That was a free one.
Thank you,
Navit said between clenched teeth. Who did this little fringe slime think she was talking to anyway?
Here's some free advice in return. Go back to your ship and clear off Bothui. If you don't, you are going to die on this dirt ball. I will personally guarantee that.
With all due respect, Lieutenant, or is it Major? Colonel? Oh, well, with the Empire in shambles these days, I guess rank doesn't really matter. With all due respect, Imperial, I've been threatened by far more impressive folks than you. Any time you want to come out and do a face-to-face, I'm ready.
Oh, we'll do a face-to-face, all right,
Navit promised, forcing down his anger. Anger and the muddled thinking that accompanied it were exactly what she was angling for.
Don't worry about that. But when we do, it will be a time and place of my choosing, not yours.
Whatever you want. Nighttime would work best. That way you can use that zero-all night stinger of yours to full advantage. You didn't just throw it away after that riot a few weeks back, did you? The one where you framed Solo for shooting into the crowd?
Navit glared at the comlink. Aside from being a general all-around pain in the neck, this woman was far too well-informed. Who in space did she work for, anyway?
You're fishing again,
he said.
Not really,
she said offhandedly.
Just putting two and two together.
Sometimes that kind of math doesn't work the way you think it does,
Navit warned her,
And sometimes, if the mathematician hangs around where she's not welcome, she doesn't live to finish her sums.
She clucked.
You're starting to repeat yourself, Imperial. If I were you, I'd try to work up some fresh threats. However, it's well past my bedtime, and I know you have work to do. So I'll let you go. Unless you'd like to go fetch your Zerol and come out and play, that is. I'll wait.
Thanks, Navit said. I'll pass for now.
Entirely up to you. Go ahead and keep the comlink. I've got plenty of spares. Good night, and happy digging.
The transmission clicked off. And restless and unpleasant dreams to you, too, Navit murmured, dropping the comlink into the disintegrator. He looked back at Cliff.
This, he said darkly, is just exactly what we needed.
Oh, exactly, Cliff ground out. So what are we going to do about her?
For now, nothing,
Navit said, picking up the disintegrator and lugging it over to the drop cloth.
For all her fishing and accusations, she doesn't really know anything.
Like blazes she doesn't, Cliff retorted. She knows we're digging over one of the shield building's power conduits. What more does she need?
My point exactly, Navit said. She spotted our digging, but hasn't called security down on us.
He squatted down and eased his shovel blade under the edge of their trapdoor.
Why not?
How should I know?
Cliff grumbled, getting his shovel into place under the other side.
Maybe she figures she'll pick up a bounty if she can deliver everything in a neat package.
Could be,
Navit said, lifting carefully. The block came up, and he got his fingers under the edge.
I think it's more likely she's got some trouble of her own with the Boffins. That means she can't go to them with any accusations.
That wouldn't stop her from calling in an anonymous tip,
Cliff grunted, as they eased the trap door off the hole.
The mood they're in out there, they're probably jumping at every cracked twig.
No,
Navit said, gazing into the hole.
No, she's not the type for anonymous tips. I think that for whatever reason, she's decided to take this whole thing personally. Professional pride, maybe. I don't know. The point is that she's turned this into a private duel between her and us.
Cliff grunted.
Pretty stupid.
Stupid for her, Navit agreed. Useful for us.
Maybe, Cliff said. So what now?
We get back to work,
Navit said, dropping into the hole.
And then we're done, he added,
digging his shovel into the packed dirt at his feet.
I'll go retrieve the Zerol. Maybe tomorrow night we'll take her up on her invitation to come out and play.
Gaverson looked up from Leia's datapad, his prehensile wingtips flicking relentlessly across the desk beside it.
Oh, and you truly believe he is sincere about this?
He said.
Very sincere,
Leia said, feeling a frown creasing her forehead. She had expected a considerably more positive reaction to Pelion's peace proposal.
And I examined the credentials he brought from the Imperial Moffs. Everything was in order.
Or so it appeared,
Gaverson said, shaking his mane.
Oh, so it appeared.
He looked back down at the datapad, touched the control to scroll back. Leia watched him, trying to understand this strange and unexpected emotional conflict she could sense in him. An end to the long war might finally be at hand. Surely this was news for at least cautious excitement. So why wasn't he cautiously excited? Gaverson looked up at her again.
There's no mention of Thrawn anywhere in here,
he pointed out.
Did you ask Pelion about that?
We discussed it briefly,
Leia said.
At that time, he'd received no word from Bastion that Thrawn had assumed support.